Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 223 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It is earlier, actually, than we normally record on a Sunday afternoon, but this is a pseudo-emergency podcast, and joining me to discuss all of the big news from July 4th is Scott Coleman. Hello, sir.
Hey, Brad. How you doing? Good to be on. Hope everybody's doing okay out there.
Yeah, for sure. We always hope that, but especially right now, and as a word, hopefully I sound all right, but I am not in my normal setup, so if it sounds funny, it's my fault, and we'll get back to our normal microphone-led setup next time around, but we wanted to get this podcast out as soon as possible, so here we are. Obviously, the biggest news that hit on the holiday on Saturday is that four members of the Braves player pool, two of which are pretty big names, actually. I guess probably two and a half of which with regard to Tuki Toussaint. But Freddie Freeman, Will Smith, Tuki Toussaint, and Pete Cosma all tested positive for COVID-19, according to an announcement by Brian Snicker on Saturday morning. Just to get out in front of this before anybody says anything, all four of these guys had to give consent for the Braves to announce this. Teams are not allowed to announce positive tests right now unless the player says so. So I saw some of the reactions like, why is this public information? It's because they told Snicker it was okay to say it. But obviously Freddie Freeman is, if not the face of the franchise, alongside Ronald Acuna, one of the two faces of the franchise and the best player on the team for quite some time. Has a fever, actually has symptoms, not feeling great, according to Snicker. And his wife, Chelsea, posted, I believe, on Instagram that Freddie's had body aches, headaches, chills, and a high fever in the last couple of days. He actually did test negative originally upon arrival at camp and then positive on Friday. In the last few seconds, actually, since before we recorded, Mark Bowman said that Freddie's feeling, quote, much stronger today, end quote, which is a good sign, obviously. But we'll stop there. We'll definitely talk about the other guys as well. But pretty big news when a top, 25 player in baseball, to be conservative, tests positive for COVID on the eve of the season.
Yeah, it kind of put a damper and really kind of put things in perspective. I know me personally, I was downright giddy on Friday. You see the guys back at the field working out, throwing batting practice, all that. Seems like spirits were high. And then, of course, there was the league-wide testing results where I think out of 3,000 tests, only 1.5% came back positive, which was encouraging. I think most people agreed that was encouraging, especially if they could keep the test rates around that level, keep them low, of course, keep everybody healthy. But then, of course, as you said, Saturday morning comes out that Freddie and three others had tested positive. And, talking to Mike Soroka earlier today, he said it really kind of shook the locker room and put everything in perspective and really just reminded people that, everybody's excited about baseball. I think they're cautiously optimistic that we're going to get a season, but there is this very giant monster in the corner of the room that the players are going to have to deal with. And anytime it's your leader, regardless of who it is, I think it's impacts the locker room. But whenever it's Freddie Freeman, he is, as you said, for, really the last decade now, has kind of been the man in the high castle in that locker room. And it sounds like he really wasn't doing very well for a couple of days. Hopefully, as you alluded to, Bowman said he's feeling better today. And hopefully he's able to get some of his strength back. And who knows what this means down the road, couple weeks, whatever. But I think anytime you have a leader of Freeman's stature get sick from this, I think it is kind of an eye-opener for everybody else around him.
For sure, and you mentioned Soroka. Also, Snicker said sort of the same stuff about how this is sort of a reminder to everybody that the way that Snicker described it was that it sobers everybody up and reminds them this is a, quote, real thing we are fighting, end quote. So, yeah, I mean, if they needed a reminder, this is definitely going to be it with regard to Freddie. And apparently, according to all reports, Freddie was doing all the right things and self-quarantining, and before all this was very careful alongside his family. But yeah, interesting to see the reactions. And you mentioned the timetable. What we don't know, and what I kind of refuse to do is to speculate too much on timetable right now. Obviously, having symptoms is not ideal. The season is, as we record this, 19 days away. Could Freddie be in the lineup on opening day? Certainly he could. Could he not be? Certainly he could not be. We'll see. I kind of just don't know. No one knows anything. This is not a normal injury where you can kind of project it out. You just don't know. And by the way, there is protocol in place. We mentioned it a little bit in passing previously, but there's this COVID IL that now exists with no minimum or maximum stay. Players have to isolate now. And then all of these guys have to test negative twice, at least 24 hours apart in order to return and have no symptoms for 72 hours and have team doctor approval. So all these things have to happen within, the next 3 weeks for those guys to play, any of them to play on opening day. And Smith and Toussaint are asymptomatic, which is good. Cosman and Freddie apparently have some symptoms. So we'll see, but there are definitely steps. And I can't imagine, just knowing what I know, the very, very little that I know about coronavirus, that none of those steps are going to be happening anytime in the next few days. It's going to have to run its course a little bit here. So it's going to be a little bit of time. We'll obviously update that as we get more information. But you did mention in passing the initial testing numbers across baseball. They got a lot of celebration, and it appears that that was very early in terms of the celebration because within like the day and a half after that, a lot more cases got announced. So I'm kind of curious as to why baseball did what they did messaging wise. They wanted to put out the good story, I guess, but it was pretty clear to me at this point in time that that was never going to be the case based on what was going to happen in the next couple of days. I don't want to say that they were doing it on purpose, but it does feel like that encouraging report was never actually real.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it's inevitable. There are going to be cases. I don't think anyone disagrees with this, and not just in baseball, in all the sports. If they're going to play high name players, players who are known household names across the country are going to test positive. And I think so far, Freddie is probably, not probably, he is the biggest name to test positive so far, and there's going to be positive tests in season. It is inevitable that this is going to be a very, very real thing. You talked about Will Smith. You and I were talking just before coming on. Will Smith was one of the Braves' biggest offseason additions. He gets the 3-year, 4-year contract, big money, a pivotal role as presumably either the Braves closer slash big out getter, which we could argue about which one's the more important title. But the Braves are going to count on Will Smith extremely over the next couple of years, and not that this is necessarily something that's going to impact him for years down the road, but at least as far as 2020 goes, if it wasn't Freddie, I think we'd be talking about Will Smith at length today. And he is asymptomatic, which is encouraging. He still has to have those negative tests, as you said. You hope that he doesn't develop symptoms suddenly, but again, it's not great. One thing I think that is worth pointing out is I think it was maybe the Rangers organization or another organization said that, so much of what they wanted to, the players pushed for in these negotiations is immediate testing. And there's talk now that players who tested on Friday still don't have their results. And that is a very real problem because, again, if someone's carrying this and they don't know it, that's 48 hours they're going to be in close proximity with other people. Where they could, even if they're feeling fine, of course, get others sick. So it sounds like baseball has some real kinks to get out. As you said, it's not a surprise they fired out the old positive press release. And I think at least at first it does seem encouraging. But as you said, as you peel back the curtain a little bit, there's still this very large monster looming in the room where it's going to be a thing they have to work around and deal with.
For sure. And we're going to talk about baseball because that's what we do on the show. So the rest. Most of the rest of the podcast is going to be, what's going to happen baseball wise. But I just want to say out loud, and I know you agree based on our conversations, baseball is not the most important thing here. It's what we're going to cover. But, obviously there are far-reaching implications possible on even the guys who are asymptomatic. We just don't know what's going to happen, health wise with them and timelines. And we're going to talk baseball, but we acknowledge, at least I'll speak for myself, I don't think that baseball is the most important thing here. It's just that what we're covering and they're going to try to play, et cetera. So there you go. It's not. I definitely. It's definitely funny funny is the wrong word. It's definitely strange for me to discuss the baseball ramifications of Freddie Freeman testing positive for COVID-19. It's just that we have to try to do that on the show. But I do feel like it's very weird right now, in addition to just the reality of all of it, to pivot to baseball. But we're gonna kind of have to do that right now, if that's all right with everybody else.
Yes. Yeah. I think, as you know, I mean, everything. I think everything is with perspective, and
it
you know,
a be.
comma, but after everything we say. But as you said, you know, when we aren't doctors. I think everybody. I don't want to speak for everyone, but you know, me personally, I use sports as such a relief from everyday life, and a way to just kind of get lost in a game for a couple hours to take your mind off of, even if there wasn't this health crisis going on, just as a way to kind of get away and get lost in a baseball game for a couple hours. So happy to be talking about some real on-field baseball stuff now.
Yep, we're going to do that. Okay, I guess first on the agenda here is what happens at first base if Freddie was to miss any time. That's been, you know, a discussion point I know I've seen today. It's not like it was, I'm sure for some people it was immediate, but you know, after a few hours of perspective, you know, the local reporters and stuff have been talking about this and fielding questions. I know Snicker was asked about it today a little bit, but basically what happens at first if Freddie were to miss opening day or to miss a week or two, how that might go. And there are some obvious candidates. I know Snicker mentioned Austin Riley. He was the first name that sort of popped in my mind as a guy who has the bat profile at first base. Snicker, I guess, gave him a mini endorsement today in terms of maybe being able to handle that positionally on defense. You also have Camargo as an option, although he's probably better at third than Riley. So if you're going to do that, you just play Camargo at third and Riley at first, if Riley can handle that. Markakis was part of the discussion in my head anyway, because he's been the emergency guy there at times when Freddie's been banged up. And then you have Adam Duvall, apparently got some mentions today as well. Those are kind of the four on the roster options. I know Culberson was mentioned. That's a guy you do not want to play at first base as a full-time option. I know there are people that love Charlie Culberson, but I would hope that even they could acknowledge that Charlie's bat is not a first base bat, probably in a real sense, because most of his value comes from being a versatile guy. You don't want to have to play him there full-time. And I guess, you know, some of the non-roster options, Yonder Alonso at one point was a major league first baseman. I'm not sure if he still is at this point in time. But also a guy, I guess more of a theory to mention here, is that without Freeman, if he were to miss any time at all, the Braves don't have much left-handed pop in the lineup. They have Markakis, they have Camargo is obviously a switch hitter, same with Ozzy, but they don't have that that big mashing left-handed bat if Freddie were to miss some time. So a lot of things to consider there, but what was your first thought when you were considering like what would happen if Freddie were to miss a week or two?
I think the luxury with all those names you mentioned and the versatility on the roster, and you, I, and Eric talked about this with the DH maybe a week ago when it came out that there was going to be the universal DH, that they do have some flexibility here. Now, nobody is going to replace Freddie Freeman. He's the best first baseman in baseball, and if he is going to miss time, there's no real way to overcome that, right? No matter what they do, mix and match and platoon splits and all that, there's no way to replace Freddie. But with that said, I think there's some options here. I'm with you. I think Austin Riley probably makes the most sense. In this shortened season, I am in full favor of letting the young guys go. And we'll talk about Felix Hernandez here on the second half of the podcast, but and what that does as far as opening up spots for younger guys. And, you know, I'm in favor of playing young guys this year. This year is going to be so weird. I'd rather give him at bats, someone like Austin Riley, if you will, compared to somebody else. You mentioned Nick Markakis, who, if you believe what was kind of talked about today, it sounds like there's going to be just this revolving door between who's in the outfield and who's DHing on any given day. Marcelo Zuna, not a first base candidate, but somebody who could DH, play the corner spots. Nick Markakis fits that profile as well. Adam Duvall, assuming he continues to play, we've talked about his diabetes. Thankfully, when you talk about first base, I'm not suggesting anybody in the world can play first base at the major league level, but and I think Freddie is so good over there, he hides how many things can go wrong at first. You know, this is not replacing a shortstop where you have to have an extreme skill set in order to play it passably at a big league level. You do have some options. So as of today, July 5th, I would lean towards Riley probably getting the most starts at first base. Ideally, they would, as you said, have a left-handed masher, especially the way that SunTrust/Truist plays is more favorable to lefties than righties with the short porch and right. I think ideally you find a left-handed bat, but I'm just not sure you know, how you realistically could do that. It's funny. Somebody said, can we do the Matt Adams trade again and bring him in for a couple weeks? I don't know off the top of my head where Matt Adams is, but somebody of that mold. I don't think Yonder Alonso is the answer. But if there was an opportunity to bring in a left-handed bat as insurance for Freddie, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, even if it's for a week or two or three, and then you have him in a backup role. But I guess as of today, to answer your question, I would lean towards Riley getting the most of them with maybe a couple of Markakis starts sprinkled in.
I agree. I think if you're trying to find a, and again, just to reiterate, we don't know that Freddie will miss any time. If he does miss some time, I think if you were trying to find an everyday, quote unquote, everyday option, it would probably be Riley, I would imagine. But if not, you could, as you mentioned, just kind of shuffle guys around. Markakis can play there. He's played there before. Camargo could play there. Duvall could play there. You can kind of swing guys around. I do think that it's worth noting that even before this, it's something I've never really thought of, and we said out loud, even before any notion of Freddie missing time, you could probably convince me the Braves or could use another left-handed bat somewhere available. Not a huge need by any means, but you know, they could be active on the market here, and probably not a huge splash name, but if they could find someone who's like undervalued, that's in first base, like you mentioned, is a very easy spot for some of these guys who could be power bats that may have nowhere else to play. To have that plus the DH, you could maybe find some extra value somewhere on the market of a guy who might be a platoon heavy guy that's a left-handed bat, whatever you want to say. It's a pluggable hole if it even is a hole at this point in time. But also lineup wise, I don't want to get it down this rabbit hole, but if Freddie were to miss time, I don't know how Snicker would handle that. Would you want to move Ronald Acuna to third, et cetera, et cetera? I don't want to do all that today because we just don't know. But that's just something to consider as well, because you basically just written Freddie Freeman in pen as a number three hitter for the last decade, and that would change if he's unable to play. So yeah, there you go.
That is an interesting – it's funny, as I was getting ready for this, that thought crossed my mind. And it's – you know, the Braves, to begin with this year, were going to have a top-heavy lineup, right, with Acuna, Ozzy, and Freddie, and Ozuna presumably fourth. If Freddie does miss time, you are extremely top-heavy all of a sudden, right? Because you know what you're getting with Acuna and Ozzy. Ozuna has been good, not great, but he's really kind of had that one amazing season. Other than that, he's been steady, but nothing otherworldly. And then, of course, we know that really 5 through 9 is going to be consistent and pretty good, but you don't have a ton of a ton of proven season-long bats there. So that is an interesting debate. I think it's one that we could probably get into for an hour today about lineup construction and if Acuna and Ozzy would be better served hitting other than 1 and 2. But that's definitely something I think that will become a topic of conversation the next week or two.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't, but it might have to be at some point in time. I know you mentioned in passing earlier that the Will Smith news would have been big news on its own, and I totally agree with that. We'll get into that and Felix Hernandez and much, much more after a quick break to hear from our sponsors on today's show.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
All right, Scott. Before we get to Felix, Will Smith, that's obviously, again, we're hoping he can go early on. Pitchers have to ramp up, but he's a reliever, so there isn't that stretch out component. We'll see what happens there. But as we get into Felix Hernandez, and sort of this all goes into one in some ways, the loss of a left-handed pitcher in Will Smith might be a huge thing, because as Felix Hernandez is apparently going to be opting out of a 2020 season, this isn't a huge surprise. to me. I will say, because he is an older guy, number one, he has, I think he's earned like $200+ million in his career. And yeah. this is a guy who's basically trying to make the team in order to make less than $1 million for this year. And I know it's not all about money, but if you were trying to design a player that should consider even more heavily opting out, this would be the guy. I was not terribly surprised, but I hadn't thought about this though, so that's on me for not thinking about it. But Felix is going to miss the season. He was not even on the 40 man yet, so he was not a lock to make the team. But we'll get into projections in a minute. But the absence of Hernandez, everyone is assuming that means Sean Newcomb is now the front runner for the number 5 starter spot. And if Newcomb is going to start, the only other lockdown left-handed reliever, if you remove Newcomb, is Will Smith. They have other options, you know, AJ Minter among them. But if you were to do that combination of Newcomb starting and Will Smith not being available for a couple of weeks, your left-handed reliever pool is taking a hit.
It really is, and you're right. I think publicly Newcomb is presumed the fifth starter, and again, who knows exactly what they're going to do. But you're right. I don't think anybody necessarily is overly excited at this point that AJ Minter could be your guy to face, Juan Soto, Bryce Harper in the later innings. It's not to say that Minter isn't capable of it, or there's not somebody else on the roster who's capable of stepping up as a lefty specialist. But obviously, Will Smith was paid a high dollar because the Braves really value him. He is as close to automatic as it gets against lefties, especially in the big leagues. So you're going to need him. You mentioned the fifth starter thing. It sounds like the Braves do want to, I guess, appease Newcomb's desire to be a starter again. Whether or not that happens, I think at least to start, it makes sense when they do these shortened starts and see what happens. And finally, you know, with Felix Hernandez, I think his value, to me anyway, was really going to be shown more over that 162 game regular season. When they knew they weren't going to have Cole Hamels right off the bat, they probably didn't want to overexert Soroka and Fried over, you know, for 200 plus innings in their second and third full seasons respectively. I think it also comes down to the numbers game. You mentioned it being a 40 man roster issue. Even with the expanded rosters, I just wasn't entirely sure what kind of role Felix was going to have. And he has been pretty bad the last few years. I know he had a couple of nice starts back in March, but again, I went back and looked at those starts, and other than one game against the Red Sox in which they had maybe half of their regulars out there, he was facing the B squad of the Orioles, which is pretty horrific when you think about what their A squad looks like. And I think the Marlins he might have faced, and again, just not facing, he's not facing the rigors of a big league lineup. And But by all accounts, Felix seemed like a great presence in camp, and seems like a great guy, as you said. He's made $215 million, and it's not all about money. But as you said, him, Ryan Zimmerman, those kind of guys who are more than well off financially, not worried about service time. I don't blame him one bit for taking the year off and seeing what comes next for him in another 6 months or so.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame anybody. I want to say that very clearly. I would not blame anyone for opting out of this season, but he is, again, just in my mind, a perfect case study of someone who probably should have considered it even more than anyone else would have, and he's making that decision. I'm with you. I think the loss of Felix on the field is probably not going to be that big, especially for a team that does have a bunch of young arms. Like, you get into that Kyle Wright, Bryce Wilson territory where those guys easily could have been better than Felix anyway this year. Felix, we don't know what he would have been under normal circumstances, but he's been pretty bad the last couple of years. So obviously a once incredible starting pitcher, but not someone that I think you're going to lose a ton from. But having that extra arm to take on innings, and you know, early in the season, I know a lot of the projections had Felix making the team. Early in the year when they were trying to maybe do these, like, you know, piggyback starters, that would have been kind of valuable. But I think once everybody's stretched out, he probably isn't one of your best 4 or 5 starting pitchers. So the loss of that is mitigated to some extent. But again, you know, I'm on record as thinking Newcomb is better in the bullpen long term. And that doesn't mean he can't start. I still think he has a chance to maybe be a good starter. But we know he's good in the bullpen, and that does hurt the bullpen just by proxy. Yeah. That you're taking out your number 2 left-handed guy from the bullpen and Sean Newcomb and making him your 5th starter is probably the right move now. I think Newcomb is probably, if you ask me who's going to be better for this year only, no odds between Newcomb or Wright or Newcomb or Wilson, I'd probably take Newcomb, but that doesn't mean it's not like it's a loss to your bullpen, if nothing else. So we'll see what happens there. Obviously, we're hoping Will Smith's back in the mix, and that helps the bullpen quite a bit. But it does rob from a strength to potentially bolster the rotation.
It does, and I think it's funny you mentioned how Newcomb and being who he is, and I mean, the running joke is that, you know, the year is going to be like 2032, and the Braves are still seeing if Sean Newcomb can be a starter. Again, I'm not saying he can't figure it out. It's not like he's old. He's in his mid-20s, but he has been the exact same guy with the exception of a couple very brief stints in his career since he was drafted. When he's not walking people, he's generally getting hit harder. And of course, we know the issues when he is walking people and striking out more people. Of course, he looks up and he's at 95 pitches in the middle of the third inning. So I hope it works out for Newcomb. I'm as big of a Kyle Wright fan as there is. I thought he was going to break out last year, and it was probably a year or two premature. But again, you don't want to give too much credence to a couple of spring training starts for that exact reason. You're not facing full length big league hitters in lineups for, you know, 100 pitches. But if it was me, I would probably give the ball to Wright as a fifth starter and keep Newcomb in the bullpen, especially if they don't think Will Smith is going to be ready for full on duty by opening day.
I agree with that. I do think that Newcomb is safer than Wright, but I think Wright's upside is higher. And if they see what they need to see from Wright, I would be on board with that. We'll see. And again, they might use more than five starters at the beginning of the season. You might see some creativity. You might see Wright and Newcomb piggybacking each other. I don't know how they're going to handle the first couple weeks of the season when they had this 30-man roster. Josh Tomlin could be heavily in the mix during that time as like a second piggyback starter. But yeah, ultimately, I think the team would be better if Wright performed adequately to have Wright as the fifth starter and Newcomb in the bullpen. But we'll see how that goes along the line. But all indications are, at least from the reporters that are more dialed in than we are, that Newcomb is the front runner for that spot. So that's the reality at the moment. Last thing in terms of guys being available or not is that this is not like a huge impact thing for us broadly, but Eric Young Sr. is going to opt out, and he's the first base coach. Snicker said that he's a high-risk candidate, and that kind of leads to the decision there. They're replacing him internally. Obviously, coaches and managers are of an age group that is more vulnerable to this, in addition to any other health issues. So not a surprise that you would see someone on the staff opting out. Obviously, wish him the best and hope that's the right decision. And they're going to replace him with someone we probably don't know a lot about. But I just want to make sure we said that out loud. Again, not an on-field huge thing, but EY Senior is very, very well regarded within the within circles of the team. I have to say, and Scott and I are about to argue about this right now in person because I saw him writing something in our document. Mark Bowman did include Felix Hernandez in his roster projection. I looked at this. We're doing this right now in the air, but we're about to transition into discussing Mark Bowman's 30-man roster projection. And by the way, that came down to no fault of Mark's. That came down at a really bad period of time for Bowman. He announced that about a day before all the news hit. And so this is before the COVID stuff. This is before Felix opted out. So you're getting into a 30-man roster that has some changes probably coming to it. At least one of them has to come with Felix. And I'm giving Scott grief on the air right now. So that's funny. But
I can't read. Reading's a skill.
It's funny. I doubled back. I was like, wait, I think he's on there. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But let's go through this real quick to talk about the roster projection, because this is something we even were back doing in March. Bowman puts together these nice, I would say, very informed and sourced roster projections. He's usually pretty close on this stuff because he hears stuff. He's not just giving his opinion. So 30-man stuff, it's different because eventually it has to go from 30 down to 28 down to 26, and it's a bit of a challenge through that way. I will say this, the only surprise, if there even was one, to this originally for me was that Culberson was not on it. And even then, that's a mild surprise. I think we have the rep of being a little bit lower on Charlie than the fan base is. But given what they already have, and for me, the impetus would be to carry a lot of pitching early on for the reasons we've already discussed, like the piggybacking and guys not being stretched out. Culberson was the only guy that I could say was actually a mild surprise. But we'll go through the position players real quickly. You have the two catchers, Darnold and Flowers. You have Freeman. Obviously, there's a question mark there now. Ozzie Albies and Dansby Swanson. Those are the locks on the infield. You have Riley and Camargo. You have Adani Hetchavarria as the backup shortstop, of which you need one on your roster. He's probably by far the best candidate for that, so he's on there. And then in the outfield, no surprises, Ronald Acuna, Marcelo Ozuna, Ender, Adam Duvall, and Nick Markakis. So does that group surprise you at all? I mean, I just don't know. Yeah. I guess if you're a Culberson fan, you're arguing for him instead of a pitcher, because I don't know who you remove from that 13-player position pool.
Yeah, I think the only, in addition to Culberson, maybe an Alex Jackson type as a third catcher. I don't know if Darnold has some injury histories. Flowers has been good for at least one injury just about every year since he's been with the Braves. And again, I mean, you're catching in the South and during the summer months. It's totally understandable why you're going to get banged up.
And even then, by the way, like, you're still arguing for those guys in place of pitchers, because you're not going to remove anyone we just named. I understand that maybe you could argue that if you don't need a backup shortstop, because maybe you could shift Ozzie there if Dansby got hurt, then replace him. But they're going to carry Hetchavarria, I'm pretty sure. I would as well, by the way. I would certainly endorse having him over Culberson on the roster.
Well, and I think, you know, we are fans of a National League team, and we're just not super familiar or used to seeing how DHs are utilized. But I had to remind myself, too, because you have the DH, there's no need. There's not this situation of you pull your starting pitcher in the fourth inning and all of a sudden you're burning your bench and you're out of guys. I mean, really, again, you're going to want to rest players a little bit more just because it's not your normal year, but there's no pinch hitting. You do have the DH available as well to give guys kind of a half day off. They're still hitting, but of course not standing out in the 90-degree temperatures for 3 hours. So because of that, at first I was a little surprised there wasn't another hitter on there, but for that exact reason, and as you said, pitchers are not going to be stretching out and going 100 pitches right off the bat. I guess it does make sense to have another arm or two, especially if we don't know what the rotation is going to shake out as, and with Newcomb and Smith and all those things we just talked about. So I guess it makes sense to me. But again, the no need to pinch hit, or at least pinch hit as often for the pitchers, I think plays a big role in this that maybe you, I, and most people haven't accounted for, just because it's a different kind of baseball than what we've watched for forever, basically.
No, I will definitely cop to this. I'm glad you said that, because it's a very important factor here that we've not discussed. So that's on me for not talking about this before. But yeah, I mean, our brains are definitely trained for no DH baseball, and you do not need 14 position players if you're not pinch hitting. Like, and again, there'll be some pinch hitting still. It's not like they're just never going to pinch hit, but the volume goes way down when you remove the pitcher spot. You could still see situations where they're pinch hitting for Ender Inciarte, or they're pinch hitting for, you know, whoever in the lineup that day. If they're starting Ender for defense and you get in a high leverage spot against a left-handed pitcher and you go to Adam Duvall, that makes a lot of sense. But day in and day out, we'll see full games now without pinch hitting, I would imagine. And that just doesn't ever happen, and now it's going to. So I'm glad you brought that up, to be sure, because that definitely decreases the need, not necessarily for Culberson, but just for the depth that you would see. More often now, you'll go to platoon stuff, and you want Hetch for defense, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I think that's even another argument in favor of carrying fewer position players. I will say this. There's no limit on pitchers early on when they have 30-man projections and 30-man rosters, but they do have to get down to 13. 13 is the maximum allotment of pitchers when the roster goes down to 26. So it's going to be 13 and 13 probably when they get down there, which means if you do want to carry a third catcher, you got to find somebody to get rid of. Or if you wanted to carry Culberson, you got to find somebody to get rid of. The third catcher is probably more practical, frankly. I know Culberson's the emergency guy, but I don't know what's going to happen there. We'll see. I do think that they're basically, barring injury and barring like somebody just falling apart in the next 3 weeks, there really are 12 locks and maybe Hetchavarria. I don't see them in this world where there's no AAA baseball. There's no reason for them to not have Riley on the roster now. There's no reason to not have Camargo on the roster now. I just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. No, I'm with you. I think the pitchers have a little more fluctuation just because you don't know. I mean, we have Darren O'Day here locked in, or maybe not locked in, but penciled in. And of course, there's major health questions with him and a couple others. But no, I think the position players are a little more set in stone. And again, just because this is the, you know, the 30-man roster, it's, I mean, injuries are going to happen. Non-COVID injuries are going to happen. You know, somebody's going to hit the DL, and then you do have if Ender and Ciarte gets hurt for the third time in 4 years, you have that option to bring up one of your outfield prospects. So it's you know, it's everything like this is, it's so out of I guess unusual, if you will, with everything going on, and then you almost forget, oh yeah, you can make a regular roster move if you have to make right. one. It's not like they have to roll these 30 guys out regardless for a month until the roster shrank down.
Yeah, let's get into pitching now because that's a good transition point. There are a bunch of locks on here. Originally, Bowman's projection had 17 pitchers. That did include Felix Hernandez, who we can obviously cross off at this point in time. But you have Soroka, you have Freed, you have Hamels, you have Foltynewicz. Those guys are absolute locks. You have Will Smith, who, if healthy, is a lock. Mark Melanson, Shane Green. You have Martin, you have Luke Jackson, you have Darren O'Day. Those guys all seem to be locks if they are healthy. You get into Sean Newcomb, another lock if healthy. And then you get into a little bit of gray area. So I just named 11 guys that I think are absolute locks. Then you get into either Kyle Wright or Josh Tomlin or Bryce Wilson or two of those three or all three. Someone like that is going to be on the roster as a long man slash sixth starter type, especially early on in the season. And then you get into your other straight bullpen candidates, your AJ Minters, your Jacob Webbs. Tukey was on Bowman's projection. That's who Bowman went with, was Minter, Webb, and Tukey as his final three, alongside Tomlin, Newcomb, and Wright, and Felix. And then you get into the other crop, which is like, you know, you have Bryce Wilson, you have Chad Sabaka, Patrick Weigel, Grant Dayton as a lefty could be interesting now if Newcomb is going to be in the rotation. You might want another left-hander. That's kind of it that I saw. I know people want the Braves to carry Christian Pache. That's not going to happen, I don't think, early on. But I don't know. I mean, without Felix, I would probably change Bowman's projection and add in Wilson to start with, because you want another starter to maybe do some piggybacking. Otherwise, the rest of his projection holds up, provided that Smith and Tukey can be there. And we're going to assume for this exercise that they can be, but obviously those are question marks right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Bryce Wilson's probably the leader in the clubhouse. He did not have a good spring, and I really don't know how much to lend to, of course, a couple spring starts, especially when they were 3+ months ago. But for that very reason, I think Bryce Wilson is somebody who has obviously done it at the big league level. You could give him the ball and hope for 50 or 60 innings and not have to cover your eyes too much. Side note, Mike Soroka with the beard is a good look. He went from looking like 18 years old
he does
and
look
lost
older.
It like at a mall to being like, you know, he's a good looking kid now. So anyway, I noticed the beard in an interview. I thought he looked good.
He does look older, yes.
But no, I think, again, health assuming, you do have a couple of guys who have had some, you know, Chris Martin, of course, in the playoffs, and he had some injury things with the Rangers, and Darren O'Day, who we just talked about. So inevitably, there's going to be some fluctuations with bullpens. That's why the Braves and so many others load up on relievers, because they know, especially over a full season, you're going to have guys get hurt, you're going to have ups, you're going to have downs. But it is an opportunity for some of these guys who probably would have been left out on the original opening day roster a few months ago, the AJ Minters, Grant Dayton, who you mentioned. I think it's an opportunity for them to step up and fill a role, because you have the three batter minimum. I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult to justify carrying somebody like Grant Dayton. But again, if Newcomb's in your rotation, you're just not sure about Will Smith, maybe a guy like him or AJ Minter, who probably has a little bit of a leg up just because of the things he's done a couple of years ago. It gives you some options, maybe not the best options in the world, but again, hopefully, in theory, these are not guys you're going to be counting on to lock down your eighth and ninth innings regularly.
Right, and eventually you got to get down to 13. And if the Braves have good health, which is obviously a big if, you get to 11 or 12 really fast in terms of pitchers, of guys who we know will be there. Like your bullpen, your better bullpen guys are established. You know, your Smith, Melanson, Green, Martin, Luke Jackson, and maybe O'Day, those guys are very established, will be their bullpen pieces unless they just fall apart or get hurt. So we'll see what happens. There are some decisions to be made. This is a note that goes for both Josh Tomlin and Charlie Culberson. There is some monetary concern. I don't know how much of a monetary concern. That's a question for Liberty Media, but especially on with regard to Culberson, those guys are not on the 40-man right now, which means they're not guaranteed any money at the moment. So if they don't think, especially for Culberson, I think Bowman mentioned this as well, if the Braves didn't think that Culberson was going to be on their final 26-man roster, they have a reason not to carry him with 30, because if they carry him with 30, they got to pay him. And put him on the 40-man, do all that stuff, give him a real contract that's going to guarantee him some money. And honestly, I don't see Culberson as being on the 26-man roster unless there's an injury. Obviously, there's a lot that could happen between now and then. But if they only carry, you know, 13 position players, which seems to be likely to me, there's monetary reasons as well as performance reasons to not consider guys like Tomlin and guys like Culberson who are not on the 40-man. That was also the case for Felix, by the way, who's not around anymore. But those are the three guys that are really not on the 40-man roster that were really projecting to be in the mix. So subtract one of them, but there are still two left. And if they care about money, and owners always care about money more than we want them to, that's a consideration as well.
Yeah, and I think too, because they know they have the roster cuts coming pretty quick. I don't have the dates in front of me when they go.
It's like every 2 weeks, I think. Yeah. From 30 to 28, and then 28 to 26.
Yeah, well, and then the 40-man roster thing, too, is significant because as the Braves have gotten better, they have naturally, now you compare what their 40-man roster looks like, the depth of it today versus what it was 2 or 3 years ago, and it's night and day different. And I think that's a sign of a good, deep ball club when you don't just have a good 26-man roster, you have a good 40-man. You feel like most guys, other than a prospect or two who might be on there for service time reasons, you want to have really close to 40 players who you could, in theory, throw out there any given night and feel pretty confident with. So, again, this is all, as you said, this is kind of more of a numbers and financial game stuff that maybe your casual fan doesn't necessarily think about. But nonetheless, I would hope that a couple $100,000, again, it's not my money, I'm not writing the check, but I would hope that isn't the difference between a player making the roster
yeah,
or not.
But, me too.
But, again, it is something that is a real part of it. And if they feel a player is the best person to go with, I would hope that a few $100,000, if it is one of these guys, would be the determining factor. But again, it's not our call.
I would agree. And I would hope it would be nothing more than a tiebreaker. For instance, if you were trying to compare Culberson to Hetcheverria and thought those guys were really, really close, maybe you just go with the guy who's already making the money. I don't know. But yeah, somebody mentioned that was a consideration. I was like, well, that does make some sense. I mean, especially after all of the machinations between ownership and the players, that ownership may be able to save another $500,000, something like that. That probably is not a non-zero concern for them. Okay, that's probably enough on the roster stuff for now. We'll obviously have more opening day again, 19 days away, and hopefully less negative news between now and then would be good, but we obviously can't dictate that. Last thing before we get out of here, and we'll spend very little time on this for right now, but there was an Associated Press report that came out on Saturday that the Braves, quote, gave no indication they are willing to consider a name change, end quote. That comes after the Washington Professional Football Team and the Cleveland Indians announced that they're looking into changing their names. Obviously, the Washington one has been in the news forever, and it seems like they're probably going to do that. The Indians, a little bit less so. Chief Wahoo was not a good thing, and they got rid of that, which was good. But those teams are probably going to change their names. The Braves have not, at least that I've seen, gotten too much heat on the name of the team. It's gotten more focused on the CHOP, which they've been quiet on, by the way, conspicuously so. Since the uproar back in October, the Braves went kind of silent on the CHOP stuff since October. The statement that the team put out through the AP says that the team is, quote, honors, supports, and values the Native American community, and that will never change, end quote. I have no other buzz on that. I just wanted to make sure people knew that report did happen. It was not announced by the team. It's one of those team statements that was not actually announced by the team. It was like given to the AP because I'm sure the AP asked for it. The team kind of went out of its way to not announce anything about this. But I just wanted to say that's out there. I know there was lots of at least people asking whether the Braves would get lumped in with Washington and Cleveland on this. And it seems like they're not going to change the name. The CHOP won't be an issue this year because there's no fans. So maybe that maybe they're just hoping it'll go away on its own. I don't know how that's going to go, but I wanted to make sure we mentioned that because it was news that happened on Saturday.
Yeah, glad I'm not the one having to write these press releases.
Yeah, the PR department is going to have to work overtime. And I think I don't know how I'm not even trying to say this. I do think that the chop needs to go. I've said that before. I'm not like the most enthusiastic person saying that every 5 minutes that they need to ban the chop, but I think it needs to go. But that's okay. That's an opinion thing people are on all sides of, which I don't want to get into now. But because they're not going to be fans in the building this year, maybe they don't have to address it because they're not going to be playing the chop prompt for an empty stadium, I don't think. So yeah. Maybe they'll get another year of distance between that. I'm not sure what the decision-making tree is going to be like on that, but what we do know right now is that the Braves are not, at least at the moment, considering a name change.
Yeah, I'm glad I don't have to make the decision. I think you are too. It's
yes.
It's kind of hard to – it's a losing battle because no matter what, if you're in favor of a change or getting rid of the chop – or if you're in favor of keeping it as it is and doing the chop every 5 minutes, you're not changing anyone's opinion on this. I think it's one of those things you might as well just yell at the wall in your bedroom because it's going to have the same result as yelling with somebody who has the different mindset of you. So, it's a sticky situation. And as I said, I'm glad I don't work in the Braves PR department because that is something that will – regardless of what ultimately happens, is something that's not going to be a lot of fun to deal with.
Right. And like I said, I've not heard anything really of substance on the Braves changing their name even before this, but they at least felt that it was enough to issue a statement to the AP. So somebody asked them and they responded. So we're passing it along. Last thing, the minor league season officially got canceled this week, which is not a big surprise. We knew that was coming for a long, long time. In fact, live on the podcast last time around with Eric and I, the report came out about players maybe going to indie ball and playing, and I had Eric react in live real time. I have nothing to add other than that also came down this week, a few days ago, that the minor league season was canceled, which was just a foregone conclusion for the last, I don't know, 2+ months, I would say. But any thoughts on the cancellation of the minor league season? And we've already gone through the machinations of the taxi squad and all that stuff, but now it is official, no baseball beyond the majors.
It's a bummer just because so many small towns are so passionate and support minor league ball so well. I forget who said it, but you know, I said it's one of the few places where you have absolutely no idea who the person is in front of you, and you have dozens of kids and really adults for that matter lining up to get their autograph, right? So it is a bummer. Hopefully next year they're able to have some kind of a season, but it is a shame. And hopefully the players who are not on the taxi squad, of course, are able to continue working out. And maybe they go to indie ball. Maybe they just work out with some buddies at their local high school. But it is a shame. But it did feel inevitable.
Yeah, that's well said. I've never been. Obviously, we have Eric and the crew that dive into the minor league stuff, and I feel for them because they invest an inordinate amount of time in watching and scouting and just enjoying minor league baseball in a way that I kind of never have, frankly. I keep an eye on it because I need to for this podcast and other things. I've not ever been that guy, but I can even appreciate like just going to the ballpark. I go to Gwinnett a few times a year just because it's pretty close to me and enjoy it. And it's sort of a simplest form kind of thing. Like if you just love baseball and kind of just baseball itself, you can go to a ballpark. And obviously there's always the wacky promotions, stuff like that to get you through the night. But if people just love going to baseball games, that's going to be a loss in a big way to communities. So I feel for everybody that's invested in that. Hopefully that's going to be back in 2021. We'll leave it there for now. Other than that, the baseball schedule is apparently, at least there's a report out there that it's going to probably come out on Monday. We're recording this Sunday afternoon.
Get ready. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to happen in the next couple of days, if not tomorrow. Because we kind of know who they're going to play already, I'm not sure that's a huge landmark event that's worthy of an emergency podcast because we already know that it's going to be 40 games against the NL East and 20 games against the AL East. But the order will come out and we'll know what it is. We'll know when and how the Braves are opening the season, probably on the 24th of July if it happens. And again, fingers crossed that baseball occurs. We're almost, less than 3 weeks away now. We're getting there. Any final thoughts on the show today, Scott? We've covered lots of ground, and I will say July 4th was not supposed to be all of that news. I was not planning to do like a pseudo-emergency show on the day after July 4th, but the Braves had three or four major news stories on a federal holiday. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Usually it's somebody pointed out this weekend would have been, it's a real shame, especially for you and people who live in the Atlanta area, because I think the Angels and Mike Trout were supposed to be in Atlanta for the 4th of July weekend, yes. Which would have been, just, you know, to see him in person play is really pretty cool. And obviously a guy being on the, you know, AL West team, somebody who you just don't see a whole lot in person, especially, again, if you're in the Atlanta area. So, but you're right, a little unconventional. Here, we'll close on this. $5 gentleman's bet.
Uh-oh.
Because you were a betting man. Who are the Braves opening up with? I'm going to say...
It's not the Nationals, by the way. We know that.
It is not the Nationals. I'm going to say they're going to open with the Miami Marlins. Is my very insider... I have no inside. Is my complete guess.
Okay, so if you say the Marlins, I am choosing between the Mets and the Phillies.
Probably. I mean, I guess they could do an interleague.
I mean, they could. I'm just saying, if you picked an interleague, yeah. I would make fun of you because the odds are not in your favor.
right. Yeah. Playing the odds.
Yeah, and it's not the Yankees either because they're opening with the Nats. I will say the New York Metropolitans.
There you go.
I have no inside information, nor does this matter whatsoever, but we will settle on this. No. Whenever in a post-COVID world, we'll maybe meet up and have a meal and I'll buy it.
There you go. Yeah. Whenever we get back to SunTrust Les Truist, the winner will buy, or the winner gets a beer or something like that.
I'll buy you something at Chase Field when I come out to, Arizona the next time. I don't know. We'll see. And again, I think there's some planning purposes stuff, but unfortunately, you know, the big thing about the schedule released in baseball is usually like planning out your trips and no one's going to go to these games. Maybe you could, I don't even know what you would use it for. Like off days, maybe knowing when off days are will be a big thing for planning purposes. That'll help me. I know that because, you know, I cover other sports as well. So it helps me to know when the Braves are on and when they're not. But other than that, I got nothing for you on schedule landmarks.
I am interested to see one of the things, not to go too deep on scheduling, but I am interested, you know, generally I think 2 years ago they implemented these new day game rules where if you were going to be in a different time zone, you had to play a day game that day.
Yeah.
If you were in a series in the city on Wednesday and then you were playing the next day in a different time zone, you had to play a day game on Wednesday for the most part. There were a couple exceptions. Yeah, I would imagine baseball will try to play as many day games as they can just to get players out of cities as quick as they can. So it's probably six less hours they're sitting around in hotels and clubhouses and all that. But it will be interesting to see if it's any different than prior years or if it's just, well, you know, it's going to be the middle of July or, you know, middle of August in Atlanta. If we can avoid playing at 1 p.m, we should probably do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. But on the flip side of that, and I saw some people discussing this, I think it might have been, I can't remember who it was, but there was a fan asking a writer, I think it was, about, you know, why wouldn't they do more day games for some reason? And the response was, well, you know, with no crowds, TV is even as even more important to the bottom line. So they're going to want ratings. That means as many night games as possible too. So there's the back and forth there, especially during the week. I think you will see as few day games as possible because TV is going to be everything right now in terms of revenue. They don't have any other way to make money.
Especially this year compared to others. I mean, you're going to have – I mean, on top of just not having fans, I think people are just so desperate and hungry to watch sports on TV. You're absolutely right. I didn't think about that.
So. No, it's going to be all sides. I mean, that's one of the things that baseball sort of forfeited a bit of, maybe just a few weeks of, by delaying as long as they did, and that was all ownership. And by the way, Rob Manfred embarrassed himself again this week, which we could have done a segment on when he basically said the quiet part out loud about how they wanted to have 60 games the whole time. That was it was an insane quote that he gave literally on the record. It's like, what are you doing? Part of that was part of the fever pitch of being angry about baseball was that they were giving up prime real estate where it would have been them and nothing else for all of July on TV. Granted, there isn't always huge crossover between baseball and basketball and maybe even hockey fans, but basketball comes back like the week after baseball now. So whatever head start they have, it's a week instead of maybe a month. And the basketball games probably have a little bit more weight to them given that they are playoff games in a hurry. So I don't know. It's back and forth. Obviously the fan bases do not cross over all that much, but for me they do. So I have to watch both and hopefully they'll all cooperate with me. But
Yeah.
Alas, there
it's
we are.
It's a good problem to have after no sports since
we're hoping it still happens. I mean, I know you'll be excited to watch playoff hockey when it arrives. So.
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, seriously, nothing sounds better right now than having like a game on TV and a different game on an iPad and a different game on a laptop, or, you know, maybe bring down another TV from wherever. And yeah, that the idea of that still a ways to go, but fingers crossed and with a little bit of luck, we'll be in that situation.
Yep, for sure. All right. Well, Scott, this was fun in the way that it possibly could be. I think fun's probably not the best word for it, but it was good to talk baseball for most of this podcast.
Yeah.
Our thoughts go out to Freddie and Will Smith and Pete Cosma and Tukey and anyone else across baseball that has tested positive for COVID, or beyond baseball. We hope everybody that's listening has healthy for themselves and also for their families, et cetera, et cetera. And let's get through this thing together. Everybody be careful, please, out there.
Yep.
All right. Well, subscribe to the podcast. Tell a friend. Hopefully everybody enjoyed this Sunday afternoon episode of the show. We'll be back again within a week of now. I'm not sure exactly when. It usually will be dictated by schedules and news. But we're ramping up. And jump on board with us. So we'll see everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.